Hello, welcome to Press TV's News Analysis. Coming to you from Tehran, I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for joining us. Well, from Tunisia to Libya, we have been witnessing uprisings and revolutions, and now it seems that perhaps another location can be added. How about Wisconsin in the United States? This as the state is witnessing massive protests, and Wisconsin's Governor Scott Walker threatens public sector unions with major cutbacks to the bargaining rights of employees. He says it's a matter of money and budgeting. Unions and some experts say it's a matter of denying people their basic rights.
Thousands of union protesters and their supporters continue to fill the streets surrounding Wisconsin's state capital. The opposition erupted more than 2 weeks ago when Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker put forth a proposal to rescind nearly all collective bargaining rights for most public employee unions due to a hefty state budget deficit. While Republicans overwhelmingly support the bill, the protesters call it undemocratic and a violation of their core values.
This is, you know, the United States. We talk about freedom here. We go to other countries and we claim that, you know, we're saving them from the fact that they don't have freedom. And this is what we're doing to our own people. It's astounding to me.
There's clearly a broader agenda that's being played out in many of our states with an attempt to repeal workers' rights.
Our country is not covering this. I believe that part of the reason why is because our country thinks that peaceful protest does not make news for some reason.
With no compromise in sight, Governor Walker has threatened to issue thousands of layoff notices if 14 Senate Democrats who fled to Illinois to avoid voting on the controversial budget bill don't return for a final vote, and has ordered for their arrest. The Senate Democrats have been hailed as the Fab 14 by the admirers of their decision.
He's acting like a dictator. He's not willing to negotiate. He wants the Democrats who have fled the state to come back, but he's already said he's not going to negotiate with them.
While about 100 protesters have managed to occupy the state capitol building, thousands of union supporters are locked outside of what is ironically called the People's House, as the governor's office refuses to keep the building open to the public, and restrictions only seem to be getting tighter with each passing day.
As the night falls, the number of protesters and demonstrators here in Madison, Wisconsin, only seem to get bigger. While they're not allowed inside the capitol building, many of these men and women have vowed that they will stand their grounds until their voices are heard, even if it takes all night or even longer. Susan Madaris, Press TV, Madison, Wisconsin.
And I'd like to welcome my guest to this program from Washington, former U.S. Ambassador, Mr. Edward Peck, and from New York, political analyst Matthew Reese. Thank you both for being with us. And we also have Press TV's very own Susan Madaris in Madison. I'm going to start off with you, Susan. Give us an update on exactly what's going on in that situation. It sounds some of the things that we're saying in your package, the people were talking about undemocratic principles and no freedom and no media coverage, sounds really familiar with us. We're covering everything that's happening right now in the Middle East and North Africa. Give me your take on the events that's taking place, Susan.
Well, yeah, as you mentioned, a lot of these demonstrators here have been very inspired of the latest developments in the Middle East. You have signs and posters with pictures of the demonstrations in Egypt and in Libya, and as Press TV has noted on a number of occasions, during the initial stages of the demonstration, Governor Scott Walker was compared to Hosni Mubarak and Ben Ali of Tunisia. But what is happening right now, which is a bit more undemocratic and a bit more, perhaps, so to say, something that the people of Wisconsin are not used to, is that police must now close the Capitol building. The demonstrations have been taking place at 6 p.m. Now, this is an order by a state judge to block camping overnight in the Capitol. Despite the fact that there have been reports of security concerns, there really hasn't been any concrete evidence that, you know, the protesters haven't been peaceful. So this is a bit of a violation for them. Meanwhile, yesterday I was speaking to civil rights leader Reverend Jesse Jackson. He stepped in town to support the union members. He was telling Press TV and myself that this fight is part of a larger social justice battle across the United States. It's not about Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker's budget cuts. It's more about what's happening in the wider spectrum, that if the people of Wisconsin don't stand up, then it's going to have a domino effect, and perhaps the Republican Party is ultimately going to going to prefer wealth over commonwealth, so to say, as the Reverend mentioned.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Susan, for that update. Stay with us, Joe. Let me switch over to Washington. Thank you for being with us, Mr. Edward Packett. What about what our correspondent just said, that she said, Reverend Jesse Jackson said, it's really not about Wisconsin. It's about something far greater than that and what's basically happening throughout the United States. What's your take on that?
Well, I know Reverend Jackson and I have spoken before. I've been on his program, a very thoughtful, intelligent man. And the point that you're raising is one of those things that's so interesting, that Susan being there, watching what's going on, and she had that in her package, people saying, you know, these are our basic rights. Well, yes, your basic rights is you're allowed to talk, you're allowed to demonstrate, you're allowed to do these various things. But if you are a supporter of unions, and I belong to one, and I am a supporter of unions, it is distressing at times for people like myself to see in the press, and by the way, I disagree, they're getting an enormous coverage in the media here in the Washington area and on television, which is what somebody was complaining about. There are times, there are instances in which unions have striven for the one thing that they want, more, and they have put together packages of retirements and various privileges which wind up costing a great deal of money, and perhaps it's okay to take a look at how that works. You see an article from the New York Times that says that a retired police chief, you know, is taking home a pension of $200,000 a month. What? I mean, that's an awful lot of money.
Yes.
For a pension.
Yes.
But it was negotiated. It's part of his package, and maybe he should have it.
Okay, well, I'm going to turn to... let me turn to New York and get Mr. Matthew Rice in on this. How do you see the situation? We have, you know, a lot of things happening in the regions in Middle East and North Africa right now, and people have taken to the streets, not because they're from poor countries, but in many cases because the funds have been misappropriated or even stolen in their countries. Do you find any similarities what is happening in the United States, not for a lack of wealth, but perhaps the money being misappropriated?
There's a huge amount of money being misappropriated in the United States. We saw the Bush-Obama administration continually handing out trillions of dollars to Wall Street. This country is bankrupt. I don't know how much longer the dollar is going to be able to stand on its own without constantly being bolstered by consumer savings. But you asked a little bit earlier about the basic rights of people, and the ambassador mentioned that union pensions are very high. Well, I think the way to focus what's going on in Wisconsin, and what Governor Walker is doing in Wisconsin, by the way, is the same things 49 other governors are doing in the 49 other states. What is going on is an attack on unions, an attack on collective bargaining. I wouldn't compare this as much to Mubarak. I would compare this a little bit more to 1930s, 1920s in Europe, when Mussolini came in and fought against the unions, and Franco came in Spain and closed down the unions, forced people to work for nothing. And in Germany, we know the Nazi Party came in and broke unions. Basically, there's a two-party system. One wants the wages up, one wants the wages down. It's not more complex than that. The Republicans want the wages down. In the United States, the Democrats fight hard to keep the wages down. What we're seeing in Wisconsin is a kind of a desperation move for people in the United States to try to achieve any form of representation whatsoever. They elect a president to stop the wars. The wars get bigger. They have courts that they go to try to see that their rights are carried out, and the courts are not responsive. You have legislatures that are bought. We have rubber stamp legislatures. Basically, corporate power has expanded immensely, rapidly over the last couple of decades, and immensely since World War II. This is the last chance that Americans can keep what happened in Europe in the 1920s and 30s from happening here.
So you think that America is on the brink of fascism again? You compared it to what happened in the 30s. What exactly are you saying? What do you think that the United States is facing right now? You're saying it's the last chance, or what do you see happening?
The people of the United States, if they do not react, they do not respond, if people do not carry out their citizen responsibilities, They very well may lose their right to have unions. And what was going on in Germany, what was going on in Spain, and what was going on in Italy during the 20s and 30s was a breaking of the unions. You could characterize that however you want. Mussolini called it corporatism. That is when corporations have basically control all the means of governance. And if American citizens are happy with this, they should continue the way they've been going. But if they want to participate in determining how their lives are going to be, how their lives of their children are going to be, whether they get paid at all for their work, they're going to have to exercise their citizen responsibilities. The first thing to do is the media in this country. Is basically corporate media. The alternative media in this country are people who are effectively doing apprenticeships to become the corporate media. People have to begin to just trust in their own common sense. And what you're hearing today comes from my study of what was going on in Europe and in America in the 20s and 30s. You will never hear this on the American press. You can only hear this on press TV.
Okay, Mr. Rice, I want to show a picture that we have. Actually, it is of a demonstrator in Tahrir Square. Interesting enough, the beginning days of the demonstration, he says, Egypt supports Wisconsin, one world. And Mr. Peck, is it one world? Are we talking about some of the basic things, the basic respect, basic rights for people in general, getting paid for the amount of work that they have done with this particular poster that we're showing right now? Are there any similarities to what is going on in the Middle East and North Africa and this somewhat, if you want to call it, unrest that we're seeing in Wisconsin?
I don't think it's the same thing at all, and I must admit that the professor has a more apocalyptic view of what's going on than I do. I think that an awful lot of Americans,
well, realistic, I would say, but
who Well, okay, realistic is, of course, it's precisely how we see it, sir. Don't misunderstand me. My own realistic view is that most Americans are supportive of the idea of collective bargaining. What some Americans don't like is to see the extremes to which it can be taken. One of the fathers of unionism in this country was a man named Samuel Gompers, who many, many years ago in New York, when he was leading the lady garment workers to make them into a union, somebody asked him what it was that he wanted, and Mr. Gompers replied, more. And I can understand that. That's how a capitalistic system works. But there have been some problems generated through the abilities of the unions to extract what they really want, because it has placed, I don't know whose fault that is, excessive burdens on the finances of the various states. And by the way, I think it's sometimes useful to explain to those people who do not know much about the United States that we call it the United States on purpose. Each state has its own law, its own legislatures, its own police, its own speed limits, its own liquor consumption. These are states which are semi-independent in a sense. And there are some places, apparently New York is one, where the unions have made themselves very, very well off at the cost of all the other people, including themselves, of course. And so the idea of putting some some limits, some rational thought into what it is the unions get might not be harmful. I offer one small example. There is a state in this part of the country where I live in which something like 61% of the police officers have retired on disability, and almost all of them upon retirement have gone to work for security companies as private citizens. So disability, nice to have. Justified? Well, that's a question.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Rice. You seem like you had something to say.
Go ahead. About the extremes. Yes, if we're worried about the extremes of what the unions are attaining against the extremes of capitalism, as the ambassador mentions, I think in the last few years, seeing these bailouts coming out of the pockets of the consumer, I think the extremes may be self-evident in that. You also mentioned the unions in New York. The last union to strike in New York was the Transit Workers Union, and the courts responded by putting the leader of the union in jail and fining the union $1 million. We don't have strikes anymore. They are very, very rare. Unions have been significantly curtailed. There is very little union power, and the union's only power is to collectively bargain, and that means to either strike or make a deal that is reasonable to them. Because the Taft-Hartley Act came out and limited the ability of unions to strike, we're already well on our way to eliminating the significance of unions. What was going on in Wisconsin and Indiana and Ohio with these very extreme anti-labor, anti-union, anti-democratic legislation coming down is basically finishing unions, not limiting them and not bringing down extremes. What we have now is an extreme in the power that capital holds over the United States. The Supreme Court of the United States made a ruling a short time ago saying that corporations can invest unlimited amounts of money into elections. That eliminates the democratic function of elections. If you can't vote in a union for what to do, then where exactly is the democracy, Ambassador? Please enlighten me.
I just like to follow up on our guest in New York, Marzia. I think one of the issues that angered the demonstrators here that I was talking to was the fact that, first of all, they're saying that they're willing to help if there is a deficit. But then news came out that Governor Walker gave about $140 million in tax breaks to corporations right before he announced this fiscal year's deficit of $137 million. So this was something that angered them. Also, we need to take into consideration that the unions have agreed to benefit and pension concessions to help balance the budget. But then when Governor Walker came out and said that they must be stripped of bargaining rights, that's when the demonstrations erupted again. Another point is that not only collective bargaining rights is at stake here, it's anticipated to cut almost $1 billion from education, literally putting public schools in places like Milwaukee on the edge. And we already know that Walker's plan includes shrinking Medicaid while once again privatizing public utilities. Another issue about similarities between the demonstrations in Egypt and Tunisia is I don't think we should really read between the lines to that extent. I think when they draw similarities and parallels, the demonstrators here, at least the ones that I've been talking to, they're trying to talk about a people's power movement against, once again, a society that's dominating them. So it's not really about the nitty-gritty. It's about the general public support for basically the common man.
Okay, what about that, Ambassador Peg? Don't you see that overall, or would you see in general, overall, that it seems that since this financial crisis has taken place in the United States and the world, that the brunt of the difficulties and having to sacrifice is falling on the average working person, as opposed to the financial sector in general that was responsible for it to begin with?
Yes, I think I would agree with both of your other guests and with you on that score. We had a famous American by the name of Will Rogers, a country humorist, who once said, Professor, you know this, that the United States, Americans can be proud of the fact that they have the finest Congress that money can buy. There's a little cynicism wrapped up in that, but it's true. It is falling on the common man. That seems to happen in almost every country in the world. And the fact that the unions were willing to discuss concessions, which is, I'm glad somebody mentioned that, because they were willing to talk, but they're dealing with hardliners who were elected, heaven help us, by the people, who are now in a position to impose their own views. I don't agree with all of them or with all of their views, but it's clear that something rational, reasonable, democratic, and balanced needs to be done. And I'm not sure they're doing it the right way up there, and I can understand why people are upset, but I am not yet prepared to consider that those events there are in any way whatsoever similar to what's been happening in Libya and Yemen and Tunisia and so forth. As far as I'm aware, nobody has been seriously hurt or, heaven help us, killed by the forces trying to control the demonstrators. It's not that kind of thing at all. It isn't rage, it's concern, it's interest, you know, it's deep, deep worries, but it's not rage yet.
Okay, not yet.
Americans believe that the rule of law will back them up. The question now remains whether it will or whether the power of money, raw cash, will come out and win this.
Mr. Rice, let me jump in here. You said that. Let me just jump in quickly, Mr. Rice, because you said that Americans in general feel that that the law will back them. Reminds me of 1981, Ronald Reagan and the air traffic controllers. Let me just get this in. Air traffic controller strike at Ronald Reagan when he was president and basically changed the way unions were dealt with in the United States. And we know that many lost their jobs at that point. Do the Americans still feel that the law is going to back them up? For example, like the unions, have not the workers in general in the United States, their rights have been weeded over the years? Comparing unions to today, to 20 years ago, isn't there a very far gap as far as in the rights of unions today? Mr. Rice?
You're exactly right. And the question, the central question is what they believe, is what's in their minds. And people get their information and their points of view and their opinions from opinion leaders. And this is the media. The U.S. media is basically anti-union. There are some tiny union newspapers in a few states. There's a few of these left. But the major media is anti-union. And so what you hear in the media is the problems about how the media has taken, how the unions have taken advantage. There is a history of this. If you go back to 1895, when the National Association of Manufacturers got together, they had meetings, they decided, okay, all of us big companies and department stores, we're going to pull all of our advertisements out of any newspaper that says anything pro-labor and anything against management. And then we're going to give them back their advertisements once they come along and are pro-management and anti-labor. 100 years of this pressure has neutered the media in the United States from ever doing balanced reporting.
Okay, Mr. Rice, but we are out of time. I have to break for the news and brief. I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but thank you, former U.S. Ambassador Edward Pegg from Washington, political analyst from New York, Matthew Rice, and of course, our very own Susan Medeiros, reporting from Madison, Wisconsin. And as always, viewers, we thank you for being with us and looking at one of our top headline stories again. Well, thank you so much, and hopefully we'll see you same time, same place tomorrow for another news analysis. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Thank you and goodbye.